wonderful aerial mansion, capable of flying in the sky, to facilitate his union with Devahuti so that children could be born. Now, because Devahuti, if you remember correctly, Devahuti had performed austerities, just adopting exactly the mood of her husband, Kadama Muni, who was so austere. That meant that, basically speaking, he had no interest in material life. Because most people live for their senses. And if there is no sense gratification, there is no life, practically speaking. If there is no sense gratification, there is no reason for life. There's no impetus to be alive, practically. But Kadama Muni was not like that. He was already situated, he was a devotee already situated on the spiritual platform. And his pleasure came from a different level. Brahmasukhyam tvanantam tapo divyam putrakayena satam. Human life is actually an opportunity to perform austerities. For what purpose? Brahmasokyam tvanantam. To purify, shuddhed. To purify the self. Because at this point in our existence, we are unflinchingly, more or less, unflinchingly surrendered to the mind's desires for material enjoyment. So to practice saying no to the mind, the great sages would perform austerities. They would say no. The senses would be demanding something, and they would say no. They would live very simply, very austerely, just taking enough food and whatever necessities are required to keep the body and soul together. And they would be very detached from everything material. So Devahuti, even though she was a princess, she followed exactly the mood of her husband, and therefore their marriage was very peaceful. But it wasn't suitable for their having children, because he was so detached. So before her request to him, he was so pleased with her, he basically said, whatever you want, I'll give you this. I'll give you fully realized spiritual life. You'll share the realizations I have been meditating upon for so many years. I will share that advancement with you because of your dedicated service. And instead of just being satisfied taking that, Devahuti said, my dear husband, please, I want children. This is, in one sense, our nature. Even though we can have a fully blossomed spiritual life, we tend to give that away for material pleasures. But the wonder, the glories of Krishna consciousness, or of even the Vedic culture, or attaining one's material pleasures in a religious way, in a spiritual way, by using whatever nature one has in Krishna's service, the glory of that is that gradually one will become purified. And the result of that purification is that one will no longer want those material things. And one will only desire spiritual happiness. Really spiritual service. So we'll hear, basically that's what happened with Devahuti. But in any case, at this point, Kadama Muni, although living in such poverty, he wasn't living in poverty because he had no choice. He had full yogic powers that he had developed. And by those powers, he created a wonderful aerial mansion in which we heard the description of yesterday. Now, Devahuti, who had become very lean and austere due to her service in the mood of her husband, now her physical appearance will be worked upon. Why? Because then she would become very happy and peaceful. And then the children born, if the husband and wife at the time of conception, if their minds are very satisfied and peaceful and full of affection, then the children come out of that nature, because the time of conception determines the mentality, or the mentality of the parents at the time of conception determines the mentality of the children. So, by Kadama Muni's mystic powers, although Devahuti, this is text 25, she was coated, her body was coated with a thick layer of dirt, her breasts were discolored. She dove, however, into the lake which contained the sacred waters of the Saraswati. This was Kadama Muni's order. In a house inside the lake, she saw 1,000 girls, all in the prime of youth and fragrant like lotuses. Seeing her, the damsel suddenly rose and said with folded hands, "We are your maidservants. Tell us what we can do for you." The girls, being very respectful to Devahuti, brought her forth, and after bathing her with valuable oils and ointments, they gave her fine new spotless cloth to cover her body. They then decorated her with excellent and valuable jewels, which shone brightly. Next, they offered her food containing all good qualities, and a sweet, inebriating drink called asaram. Then in a mirror, she beheld her own reflection. Her body was completely freed from all dirt, and she was adorned with a garland, dressed in unsullied, pure robes, not dirtied in any way, unsullied robes and decorated with auspicious marks of tilak. She was served very respectfully by the maids. Her entire body, including her head, was completely bathed, and she was decorated all over with ornaments. She wore a special necklace with a locket. There were bangles on her wrists and tinkling anklets of gold on her ankles. About her hips, she wore a girdle of gold set with numerous jewels. So all this was created, including the 1,000 maidservants. Everything was created by the mystic opulences, the siddhis of Kadama Muni. But he was not inclined to use this, although having so much opulence, he was not inclined at all to use these for his own pleasures. Because in each of there are different paths in spiritual advancement. There is karma, jnana, and yoga. And of course, ultimately, there is bhakti. But each, they are all meant to lead one to bhakti, but each has its own pitfall or danger. So the danger of karma, or when karma is used properly, karma yoga is used properly, then one takes the fruit of one's work. Yat karosi rachnasi, yat johosi dadatiyat, yat tapasyasi kanteyat, tat kurusva mararpanam. The one takes the fruit of his work and he offers it to Krishna. But the danger, on the other hand, is not taking the fruit of one's work and offering it to Krishna, but using it for one's sense pleasure. So in jnana also, one realizes that one is spirit. One will never die. One becomes fearless. And when properly used, one understands that I am spirit, I am Brahman, and Krishna is the supreme Brahman, so I should serve him. But the pitfall which one tends to fall in is to think that I am spirit, therefore I am the supreme, I am the Lord. And similarly in yoga, the glory of yoga is samadhi. Samadhi means one's mind becomes very peaceful and fully fixed upon the form of the Lord. But the danger is that one is offered mystic opulences and one starts thinking that one is powerful. And one becomes attached to power, because as soon as you have some power, what happens? People say, oh, very wonderful, they come to you, oh Maharaj, oh you are so wonderful, they give you some dakshin. Of course, when they're giving, they want to take more than they are giving. They want something from you. But yet there's a tendency to become attached to these things, the power and the adulations that they bring. Kardama Muni was beyond that, yet he was ready to use these opulences in Krishna's service for good children, and ultimately it will turn out to be Krishna's service. But so powerful are those who are actually powerful. About her hips, she wore a girdle of gold set with numerous jewels, and she was further adorned with a precious pearl necklace and auspicious substances. Her countenance shone with beautiful teeth and charming eyebrows to attract. She became beautiful, and when a woman feels herself, is beautiful, she feels herself beautiful and her mind becomes satisfied. Her eyes, distinguished by lovely moist corners, defeated the beauty of the lotus buds. Her face was surrounded by dark curling tresses. When she thought of her great husband, the best of the sages, Kardama Muni, who was very dear to her, she, along with all the maidservants, at once appeared where he was. So this was the potency of Kardama Muni. As soon as she thought about him, she was brought to his presence. She was amazed to find herself surrounded by 1,000 maids in the presence of her husband and to witness his yogic power. So she understood how powerful he was and how great he was. The sage could see that Devahuti had washed herself clean and was shining forth as though no longer his former wife. She had regained her own original beauty as the daughter of a prince. Dressed in excellent robes, her charming breast duly girded, she was waited upon by 1,000 Gandhava girls. O destroyer of the enemy, his fondness for Devahuti, Kardama's fondness for Devahuti grew, and he placed her on the aerial mansion. Though seemingly attached to his beloved consort, while served by the Gandhava girls, the sage did not lose his glory, which was his mastery over himself. That means that he did not become actually enamored, because when the mind becomes attracted to something or the mode of passion blossoms within the mind, it's very difficult to control because of the identification with the mind when we want something. Actually, Arjuna asks about this. Ta keno priyaktoyam papam chariti purusha anichanapi vashna baladi vinayojita. Arjuna asks, what is it that impels one to act improperly, even sinfully, as if by force, even against one's desire and against one's nature? What is that force? And Krishna's answer was, kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava. That this force is passion, lust, kama esha. Lust born of passion, it forces, it's the most, so powerful. So Kardama Muni, even though seemingly doing this just to please his wife, he was self-controlled. He did not become controlled, pushed along by the speeding river of passion. That wasn't his mood at all. In the aerial mansion, Kardama Muni with his consort shone as charmingly as the moon in the midst of the stars in the sky, which causes rows of lilies to open in ponds at night. In that aerial mansion, he traveled to the pleasure valleys of Mount Meru. So, the great mansion, better than a Boeing 747. And they traveled everywhere, all over the universe. So they first traveled to the valleys of Mount Meru, which were rendered all the more beautiful by cool, gentle, fragrant breezes that stimulated passion. In these valleys, the treasure of the gods, Kuvera, surrounded by beautiful women and praised by the siddhas, generally enjoys pleasure. Kodama Muni also, surrounded by the beautiful damsels and his wife, went there and enjoyed for many, many years. Satisfied by his wife, he enjoyed in that aerial mansion, not only on Mount Meru, but in different gardens known as Vaishrambaka, Surasan Nandana, Pushpan Bhadraka, and Chaitra Ratya, and by the Manasa Sarova Lake. The Manasa Sarova Lake is a place of Lord Shiva. Is in Nepal, or is it in or is it in China or Tibet or something? Where is it? Huh? Kailash. Is that a country? What country is it in? You know, but even in near India. Huh? Nepal. Kailash. You have been there? No. It's very hard to get there? It's very easy. Let's go. Abhi. Huh? Oh, really? Oh, that's the Kailash is shaped like this. Oh, is that Shiva? Yeah. I've seen that from Badrinath. You can see that mountain. Or maybe from Gomukh or something. Maybe. So, he traveled in that way through the various planets as the air passes uncontrolled in every direction. Crossing through the air in that great and splendid aerial mansion, which could fly at his will, he surpassed even the demigods. So this is wonderful. This is amazing. And therefore the next verse says, what is difficult to achieve for determined men who have taken refuge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's lotus feet? His feet are the source of sacred rivers like the Ganges, which put an end to the dangers of mundane life. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word yar ashritas tirthapadas charana are significant here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Tirthapad. The Ganges is called the sacred river because it emanates from the toe of Vishnu. The Ganges is meant to eradicate all the material distresses of the conditioned souls. For any living entity, therefore, who has taken shelter of the holy lotus feet of the Lord, nothing is impossible. Because Krishna, if one takes full shelter of Krishna, the serving mood and the loving affection of that devotee conquers Krishna. He who is unconquerable becomes conquered by the devotee. And then when the all-powerful Lord is conquered by the devotee, because he has the power to do anything by his ichcha shakti, by his potency of desiring, immediately whatever he desires occurs. So when the devotee conquers him by his great love, conquers the Lord, therefore whatever the devotee wants, the Lord will fulfill that desire immediately. So what is difficult to do for someone who is an exalted devotee, who has fully taken shelter of the Lord? Kardama Muni is special, not because he was a great mystic, but because he was a great devotee. Therefore it is said here that for a great devotee like Kardama Muni, nothing is impossible. After showing his wife the globe of the universe and its different arrangements, full of many wonders, the great yogi Kardama Muni returned to his own hermitage. Towards the end of the purport. Here is the example of a perfect yogi, Prabhupada explains. He could travel all over the universe. Similarly, there is a description of Durvasa Muni, who also traveled in space. Actually, the perfect yogi can do that. But even if one can travel all over the universe and show wonderful feats like Kadama Muni, he cannot be compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose power and inconceivable energy can never be attained by any conditioned or liberated soul. By the actions of Kadama Muni, we can understand that in spite of his immense mystic power, he remained a devotee of the Lord. That is the real position of every living entity. So after traveling all over the universe, they return back to the hermitage of Kardama. Then Kardama Muni divided himself into 9 personalities just to give pleasure to Devahuti, the daughter of Manu, who was eager for sex life. In that way, he enjoyed with her for many, many years, which passed just like a moment. 47. The powerful Kardama Muni was the knower of everyone's heart, and he could grant whatever one desired. Knowing the spiritual soul, he regarded her, Devahuti, as half of his body. Dividing himself into 9 forms, he impregnated Devahuti with 9 discharges of semen. Immediately afterward, on the same day, Devahuti gave birth to 9 female children, all charming in every limb and fragrant with the scent of the red lotus flower. So these daughters were going to be of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. They will be given to the different sages who were born of Lord Brahma as wives. Then, immediately, on that very day, Devahuti saw that her husband was about to leave home, because he said, as soon as you will have children, I will leave. She smiled externally, but at heart she was agitated and distressed. She stood and scratched the ground with her foot, which was radiant with the luster of her gem-like nails. Her head bent down, she spoke in a slow yet charming accents, suppressing her tears. Sri Devahuti said, "My Lord, you have fulfilled all the promises you gave me. Yet, because I am your surrendered soul, you should give me fearlessness too." Here's Prabhupada's purport. Devahuti requested her husband to grant her something without fear. As a wife, she was a fully surrendered soul to her husband, and it is the responsibility of the husband to give his wife fearlessness. How one awards fearlessness to his subordinate is mentioned in the 5th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. One who cannot get free from the clutches of death is dependent, and he should not become a spiritual master, nor a husband, nor a kinsman, nor a father, nor a mother, etc. It is the duty of the superior to give fearlessness to the subordinate. To take charge of someone, therefore, either as father, mother, spiritual master, relative, or husband, one must accept the responsibility to give his ward freedom from the fearful situation of material existence. Material existence is always fearful and full of anxiety. Why? Because we long to have something. It is the very nature of the soul to desire and want something, to possess something. But as soon as that tendency is directed towards matter, then immediately fear comes. Bhayam dvitiya abhinaveshatasyad. Because immediately one sees, this is mine. I want it, I need it. And therefore immediately one is afraid of losing it. So fear comes when we see something is ours and something separate from Krishna. Immediately there is dvitiya, duality, bhayam dvitiya. So soon as there is duality, seeing things separate from Krishna, immediately one is fearful. Ishad apetasya viparyato smiti. And then immediately, forgetting that Krishna is the controller, and everything is his, Everything is turned upside down, and one sees everything opposite than as it is. Tanmaye yato Buddha abhijatam. And therefore, the intelligent person, the Buddha, the intelligent person, what does he do to free himself from this condition of duality? Bhaktyaika yekam Gurudeva tatma. That he worships the Supreme Lord. Bhakti aika eka. With one fixedness of attention, with his mind fixed on nothing else, he worships the Lord and he worships the Guru, his spiritual master. He cares for him as one naturally cares for one's own self. With the affection that we take care of ourselves, we serve the spiritual master. Because why? Because he sees that Krishna is manifest through the spiritual master. It is not that the spiritual master is God, but this is how Krishna manifests his mercy. And to achieve that mercy, one has to serve Krishna, see the spiritual master as Shakshad Hari, no different from Hari. He isn't God, but he's not different from God, because Krishna's mercy manifests through him. So this is the way to become free from fear. There is actually no other way. Not by thinking positively, not by thinking that you can get out of any situation, not being very intelligent, not by accumulating money. No, as soon as there is duality, there is fear. So we have to remove that by seeing Krishna in everyone, in everything, in every circumstance. And that is the process. Bhaktyaika ekam Gurudeva tatma. So to take charge of someone, therefore, either as father, mother, spiritual master, relative, or husband, one must accept the responsibility to give his ward freedom from the fearful situation of material existence. That means teaching them Krishna consciousness, leading them in Krishna consciousness. Material existence is always fearful and full of anxiety. How much money does it take that we put in the bank, or how much defense force that we accumulate, or how much knowledge that we may have before we won't worry anymore? Impossible. So Devahuti is saying, you have given me all sorts of material comforts by your yogic powers, and since you are now prepared to go away, you must give me your last award, so that I may get free from this material conditional life. My dear Brahmana, as far as your daughters are concerned, they will find their own suitable husbands and go away to their respective homes. But who will give me solace after your departure as a sannyasi? So she followed the process. Even though Devahuti had material desires, she followed the religious way to fulfill that, and the result was ultimately detachment and a spiritual desire. At least here she's speaking of the desire for liberation and the desire to go beyond material attachments to achieve the position of fearlessness, spiritual position. She continues, Up until now, we have simply wasted so much of our time and sense gratification, neglecting to cultivate knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada's purport. Human life is not meant to be wasted like that of the animals in sense gratificatory activities. Animals always engage in sense gratification, eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But that is not the engagement of the human being. Although because of the material body, there is need of sense gratification according to the regulative principles. So, in effect, Devahuti said to her husband, so far we have these daughters, and we have enjoyed material life in the aerial mansion. traveling all over the universe. These boons have come by your grace, but they have all been for sense gratification. Now there must be something for my spiritual advancement. This is naturally what happens when someone is pious, and someone is pure, and when someone is following the process. No matter how much material, Hare Krishna, no matter how much material amenities he gathers, they are not enough because they do not satisfy the soul. And one always becomes afraid and anxiety because one may lose them. So she's begging, now please give me something for my spiritual advancement. Not knowing your transcendental situation, I have loved you while remaining attached to the objects of the senses. Nonetheless, let the affinity I have developed for you rid me of all fear. So she was attached to Kadama Muni, thinking of him just as her husband, and she didn't realize what a powerful yogi he was. And he could do all, he had all those siddhis, those mystic opulences, and he had the power to award her even more than this. The greatest thing, liberation from the material world. But yet she had love for him. So now she wishes that same love, now that she understands more of who her husband is, she's hoping that love and that compassion he naturally has for her will melt his heart and have him award her the greatest of benedictions. Association for sense gratification is certainly the path of bondage. This is Devahuti speaking, so she's learned. But the same type of association performed with a saintly person leads to the path of liberation, even if performed without knowledge. Prabhupada's purport. The association of a saintly person in any way bears the same result. For example, Lord Krishna met many kinds of living entities, and some treated him as an enemy, and some treated him as an agent for sense gratification. It is generally said that the gopis were attached to Krishna for sense attraction, and yet they became first-class devotees of the Lord. Kamsa, Shishupala, Dantavakra, and other demons, however, were related to Krishna as enemies. But whether they associated with Krishna as enemies or for sense gratification, out of fear or as pure devotees, they all got liberation. That is the result of association with the Lord. Even if one does not understand who he is, the results have the same efficacy. Association with a great saintly person also results in liberation. Just as whether one goes towards fire knowingly or unknowingly, the fire will make one warm. Devahuti expressed her gratefulness, for although she wanted to associate with Kodama Muni only for sense gratification, because she was spiritually great, she was sure to be liberated, but because he was spiritually great, she was sure to be liberated by his benediction. So these are Devahuti's realizations. Anyone whose work is not meant to elevate him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise him to renunciation, and anyone situated in renunciation that does not lead him to devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be considered dead, although he is breathing. So here, this is, in one sense, we could say that this is the essence of this chapter. And we have heard right from the very beginning how Kadama Muni prayed to the Lord. And he understood that he was foolish because he was praying for something so temporary as a wife. But yet he was taking shelter of the Lord. And Devahuti took shelter of him. So we could, even though we understand this as a pastime, but we understood that there was desires for karma or enjoyment within them. But what is the result of them even though they had material desires, what is the ultimate result? That one becomes purified. This is Tivrena Bhakti Yogeni Ajeta Purusha Prabha. By taking shelter of Krishna with great strength, as they took shelter of Krishna with great strength, Tivrena with power, then all the anartas, all the unwanted things that we're attached to become washed away as the flowing Ganges, the swiftly flowing Ganges washes away all rocks, etc. from its path. So all obstacles will be washed away by devotional service. So this, therefore, is Devahuti's realizations on this. How powerful is the association with saintly devotees, even though one's heart may be not purified. And then finally, if we're working and it doesn't elevate us to renunciation, or if we become renounced, detached, and don't become attached to the Supreme Lord, this is practically, what is the use of such a life? You're dead. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Devahuti's statement is that since she was attached to living with her husband for sense gratification, which does not lead to liberation from material entanglement, her life was simply a waste of time. Any work one performs that does not lead to the state of religious life is useless activity. Everyone is by nature inclined to some sort of work. And when that work leads one to religious life, and religious life leads one to renunciation, and renunciation leads one to devotional service, one attains the perfection of work. So this is really what this part of the chapter is about. How to attain perfection through work. Even if one has material desires, even if one's heart is not yet pure. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, any work that does not lead ultimately to the standard of devotional service is a cause of bondage in the material world. Yagyatat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandana. Unless one is gradually elevated to the position of devotional service, beginning from his natural activity, yatta pravitabhutanam yena savamidam tatam, Krishna says that any man can become perfect by the process of doing work which is performed according to his own nature, because we're all individuals. We have certain talents. We have certain tendencies. We have certain abilities. So the road to perfection is not to give up our talents and abilities, but rather to use them in Krishna service. That's what Kardama is teaching. Yagyatat kamano nyatra lokoyam kama vandana. Unless one is gradually elevated to the position of devotional service, beginning from his natural activity, he is to be considered a dead body. In other words, what is the use of life if one doesn't... A dead body has no use, and a person who is just living as if he was the body, not advancing in spiritual life, is practically, it's like him being dead. Because he's not gaining the benefit that human life offers. Work which does not lead one to the understanding of Krishna consciousness is considered useless. And Devahuti concludes this chapter by saying, "My Lord, surely I have been solidly cheated by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For in spite of having obtained your association, which gives liberation from material bondage, I did not seek such liberation." So she had been associating with him for years and years and years, not knowing who he was and what his power was. And now he was leaving, and it suddenly struck her that she had not gained the proper thing, what she was capable of gaining by his association. She was missing the opportunity. It was gone. So we don't want to end up at the end of our life lamenting like this. So we should be very careful. Prabhupada's purport. An intelligent man should utilize good opportunities. Strike while the iron is hot. The first opportunity is the human form of life, and the second opportunity is to take birth in a suitable family where there is cultivation of spiritual knowledge. This is rarely obtained. The greatest opportunity is to have the association of a saintly person. Devahuti was conscious that she was born as the daughter of an emperor. She was sufficiently educated and cultured, and at last she got Kardama Muni, a saintly person and a great yogi, as her husband. Still, if she did not get liberation from the entanglement of material energy, then certainly she would be cheated by the insurmountable illusory energy. Actually, the illusory material energy is cheating everyone. People do not know what they are doing when they worship the material energy in the form of Goddess Kali or Durga for material boons. Or most people, that is what they're doing with their lives, just worshiping matter. They're worshiping with their time, their love, their hearts, their souls, and being cheated. And Prabhupada's bringing it to the actual, literally, the worship of the material energy, Durga Devi, Kali, or Maya. They ask, Mother, give me riches. Give me great riches. Give me a good wife. Give me fame. Give me victory. But such devotees of the goddess Maya or Durga do not know that they are being cheated by that goddess. Material achievement is actually no achievement. Because as soon as one is illusioned by the material gifts, he becomes more and more entangled, and there's no question of liberation. One should be intelligent enough to know how to utilize material assets for the purpose of spiritual realization. That is called karma yoga or jnana yoga. Whatever we have, we should use as service to the Supreme Person. It is advised in Bhagavad Gita, Svakamana Tababhyachara Siddhim Vindati Manava. One should try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by one's assets. There are many forms of service to the Supreme Lord, and anyone can render service unto him according to the best of his ability. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports to the third canto, 23rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Devahuti's Lamentation. So Kadama Muni is now, in the next chapter, we'll hear how Kadama Muni satisfies this more elevated desire of Devahuti, and then by he gives her a son, Kapila Dev, the Supreme Personality of God, and then he'll leave home immediately. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
That's the mood of Devahuti towards her husband. It was one of the conflicts very almost like a devotee to the Lord. I'm wondering, is that mood essential for women?
Yeah, well, for the last 2 days, we've been reading Prabhupada's explanation of this, yes. Essential in the sense that if one wants to be happily married and perform the occupation or the role of a woman properly, she should be submissive to her husband. That's her duty. And on the other side, the husband should become a devotee so that the submission isn't wasted. But even if it's... Because then, as with Devahuti, the wife will make, if the husband is a devotee, she'll make great spiritual advancement. But even if the husband is not a devotee and she's very, very chaste and pure and devoted to her husband, she'll become very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. Is it in ISKCON? Who is ISKCON married to?
Is it being preached that way?
By whom?
By
who? I'm not a superior, I'm an inferior. But I was reading it. I think I preached that. I think I, of course, you can't help it. Even if you don't want to preach it, you can't avoid it because Prabhupada says it so directly. Even if it's the most bitter poison to your ears, that a wife should be submissive to her husband, can't avoid it because Prabhupada was so direct about it. See, the reason why I sort of reacted a bit like that to say, you know, who is ISKCON married to, is because ISKCON is so big, and in different parts of the world, there's one mood, and another part there's another mood. So I don't think there's any there's very little homogeneousness in it. In many ways, of course, there are many things that are the same. But on this, in different parts of the world, the moods the mood is different. But if Prabhupada's books are read, you can't avoid it. But some people are saying that, oh, Prabhupada's taking his cultural bias and imposing that on the... But the opposite, when you take the, the women shouldn't serve their husbands, that either they're equal or superior or whatever. Prabhupada had such nice explanations of that, how the man naturally has a superiority complex, and that's the psychology. There's a way to deal with a man so that you can wrap him around your little finger. It's not actually very hard, but you have to be careful of the false ego, the big male Purusha false ego. But so the point I was making, so even if people don't always either preach that or live that or act it, it's not that the marriages stay together. It's not that things improve by the modern inventions and the changes that are made. Things just get worse and worse and worse. In the old days, there was no divorce. Even when I was growing up, I mentioned this a few times already. When I was growing up, I never even met someone who was divorced of my friends. I never even met anyone in school or anything who's had his parents divorced. Now, is it like that? With all the advancement now, feminism, etc., has it improved things? The children suffer so much, they're scarred so badly by these divorce syndromes. You wanted to add something?